Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 5, season 18. The episode where, if you don't leave us a 5-star review, my missus will tweet you and she will give you a hard time on Twitter. So just a bit of a heads up, 5-star reviews all round. on my right, I will say hello, Jackie Boy Banyan.
Hello, sorry, I couldn't help laughing there. That was probably ruined your intro a little bit,
no,
but
no,
that was
fine,
very funny.
It's fine, it's nice. It's nice when I get somebody to crack. Ryan Champion, miserable so-and-so, hello.
Thanks, what a welcome. It's nice to be back after missing a couple of weeks.
Yes, well, you know, we talked about you. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. And Trevor Agnew, who's always there, stalwart, dare I say. Hello, Trev.
Hello, you say that, but I won't be here for the next 3 weeks.
No, well, it's all right. Nobody knows that yet, Trev. Don't ruin it. I'm going to go straight to Ryan Champion. Didn't even this. This is how Ryan Champion, how unarsed he was about last week's episode. He didn't even text his predictions, boys.
It was time differences. You should have asked.
Where was you? Spain?
No, I was on my way back from America this time last week.
And before
I went to Spain.
And when did you get back? What day?
Wednesday.
Okay, cool. Just to establish that.
when did the rally start?
You got the top three right, though, didn't you, Ryan?
When did you record? You didn't even tell me, so I've no idea.
It's all right. Well, Jackie Boy Banging, we're going to do yours first. Oi Tanak, Sebastian Ogier, Chris Meek.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Mine was Chris Meek. Oi Tanak, Sebastian Loeb. Trevor Agnew's was Thierry Neuville, Sebastian Ogier, and Elvin Evans.
Not bad.
Just as woeful as usual.
Yeah.
I got the winner. What's wrong with you?
And as I say, Ryan Champion didn't even bother his arse. So there you go. Basically, we predicted very little apart from Trev getting the winner. I'm going to come to you first, Trevor Agnew. Did you think that Oi was going to secure it on Spain? Do you think it was that nailed on? Because it can be so, you know, we spoke quite a lot about some of the things that have gone on earlier in the season, Oi not being happy, you know, cars breaking and stuff like that. Do you think he was given a bulletproof car basically to just get to the end of Spain and secure that title?
Oh, I don't know about that. If you look at Taka's car, he was having issues with it that Oi has had in the past. Maybe one of us bulletproof one next year, who knows?
Well, we're going to talk about that. I want to come to that in a bit. So,
all right. Yeah. No, definitely the championship was in his hands and he had the momentum, he had the form, everything about it. If you look back over the last 2 years, try and find somewhere where it says accident against Oi Tanak, he just doesn't seem to be able to, or he doesn't put a foot wrong. So, everything was in his hands. I joshed, you know, last week and said, you know, anything can happen on the last day. If something does happen, it's going to be brilliant for the championship. Unfortunately, it happened to Ogier on the first day. But it was a well-deserved championship from Oi Tanak's point of view. And you just have to tip your hat to everybody involved in that over the last 5-6 years who have helped him and encouraged him and got him back up from the brink as well, where he was down and out for a while, and definitely, I think, back to DMAC and the resources they put behind him to help him get back on the wagon. And then, of course, remember when he was teammate to Sebastian Ogier and he was able to put it up to him in 2017. I particularly remember a stage in Amarante, I think it was in Portugal, where he was leading the rally and he ran wide, clipped the wheel. I think the only other accident he really had that year was in Poland. And then if you look back at last year, Australia was the only time where he put a wheel wrong. And this year he's been more or less faultless. So everything about it between him and Martin and the whole team have richly deserved the driver's title. And it's great to see somebody other than a Seb come out with the title. And of course, the other people like Rieger Mulder, who was involved with them, you know, his previous co-drivers. There's plenty of people, I'm sure, that he'd be thanking. And they richly deserve the success and to share in that success.
Jack, I'm going to come to you in a second because I want to ask you about media and social media and things like that. I spoke to somebody who's a mutual friend of ours who I'm not going to embarrass, but who was involved very, very early on. And I think he ran Oi as well very, very early on. And basically, he said he wasn't completely not surprised. And Hoyt had all the makings of not giving a, I can say it, he didn't give a shit, and not giving a shit is what makes a world champion. And do you agree with that assessment? Because I wasn't sure, but Hoyt always seemed to me like he could take it or leave it at times.
I think he's just very good at his poker face. You know, he handled the pressure incredibly well over the weekend, but I think you could see once he got the job done just how much of a relief it was to him. And I think that's, you know, one of his strengths, particularly towards his key competitors, is he doesn't show any emotion. He doesn't show any weakness. He's the Kimi Raikkonen of the rallying world. And he just seems so ice cool all the time. But I think we definitely saw at the weekend that, that there is pressure there. You know, as Trev's just said, really, he's developed into this incredible all-round package, and it certainly wasn't always the case. You know, we've talked about it on many times, that he was dropped from M Sport, he came back to M Sport, he was dropped, he came back to DMAC, then back into M Sport. And, you know, he's had to work for this. This has been a long time in the making, but nonetheless, his strength of character now is certainly one of his strengths. And, you know, he just is able to drive at such an incredible level. I mean, you know, that power stage was so tense, and he didn't just come through with a time fast enough to do the job. He annihilated everybody, and you know, he just has this incredible inner strength.
Yeah, Jack, I was gonna ask you about something else, but I'm gonna come to this in a second. Joking aside, you know, we always take the mick a little bit about obviously your age and everything else, which is why you won't send us a picture, which I'm going to talk to you about everybody about in a minute. But anyway, I remember the Pirelli Star Driver program, and I don't know whether you were just kind of coming into kind of journalism and stuff like that then, because that must be 9 years ago. So I don't know where you were. Were you still at uni then? But I remember, you know, I was involved in PWRC with a couple of teams. And I remember this, you know, the Pirelli Star Driver program, which is what I suppose the way we see the junior program is now, as odd so it sounds. They were all in Evo 10s. And I remember him being so blisteringly quick on some events, and then obviously, you know, having not the greatest time on others. But, you know, we're still talking 9 years ago that he was on the radar of so many people. And it's 9 years, as Ryan's just been describing and Trev's just been describing, of a roller coaster, really.
Yeah, he's quite old school in that sense, isn't he? He's, you know, it's taken him a little while to get to the level he's at now, but he's taken every bit of experience he's had along the journey of his career to come to this point. And I don't think there's anything to add about his performance this year, because I think Ryan and Trevor have covered that very well. I think it's been an OJ-like performance this year, hasn't it? You know, and to say that is pretty much the highest compliment you can give any rally driver. He's been so consistent, but not just consistent in the terms of someone who just bags points. He's been so consistently the quickest driver out there, and that package has been pretty untouchable. But yeah, I think, you know, I think it's fair to say that, you know, he doesn't really care what people think about him in terms of how he goes about things or his media or anything like that. But I think it's easy to make... you know, it's easy to take away a little bit from him there, and I don't think he should be, because he's so dedicated and focused on reaching that goal and winning that World Rally Championship. And of course, sometimes he comes across as, you know, it looks like he doesn't care or he's not particularly interested. But I think it's not that. I think to be honest, it's the media side that he's not really interested in. I think he acknowledges that it's an important part of his career, but at the same time, doesn't really care what people think about him or what people say. He's just there to win a World Rally Championship, and you don't get to that level unless you have a certain element of A, not caring what people think about you, but B, having the drive and determination necessary to put those skills together into a season. So, yeah, I think it's been an incredible season, and we're finally seeing someone come up to that Sebastian Ogier or Sebastian Loeb level of being able to perform like that on a consistent basis and not make mistakes. And also, from a personal point of view, it's lovely to see a Scandinavian win the World Rally Championship again.
Jack, everyone has forgot about that. Well,
had to get that in there, didn't we?
Yeah. I wasn't even going to mention. I genuinely forgot. So good on you for bringing it up. You've just mentioned media, and where I'm going with this, obviously, I kind of did my tongue in cheek intro to the beginning of this podcast.
What did your missus say about that introduction to the podcast?
Oh, she hasn't heard it yet. were you shocked when you seen the tweet from Sebastian Ogier's wife. Were you kind of thrown by that? Did you have to kind of verify it and almost make sure it wasn't a parody account? Because I did.
Well, it was a bit of a shock.
You'd probably explain it first so everybody understands if they haven't seen it.
I'd be very surprised
surprised if anyone in the rallying world hasn't seen that tweet.
Yeah, and it's okay. I've got a screenshot, Tony, so you can set it out on the Absolute Rally account in case.
I'm not going to say. I didn't really want to send it out. To be honest with you, I was really shocked. Although I did flippantly tweet about an hour later. I wonder what Eska Pekka Lappi misses is going to tweet after his failure. She didn't put anything out, as it turned out. But I was shocked. And you're talking about media stuff just then, and obviously, you know, not really being great at it. You know, I think Sebastian Ogier probably has people doing stuff for him and things like that. But you know, his wife is quite a high profile TV personality as well, in Germany. And I was really, really shocked. And, you know, talk about a shot across the bows to the team. And, you know, I don't think many other drivers, better halves, could probably get away with that, I'm guessing, Jack. I don't know.
We'll see in the next few weeks if he's got away with it, won't we, really? I'm sure Citroen Racing will be very upset about what was said. The tweet was not much to say about Citroen Racing. Shame on you to sit a world champion in a car like that with the infamous hashtag, which I won't repeat.
Well, you can, because Tony's already said the word once.
Citroen. So. Yeah. Citroen was the hashtag that was tweeted. I was surprised to see it, to be honest, Tony, but you know, Andre has been quite outspoken on social media before about Sebastian and what's going on there. So I was quite surprised at the wording and how flat out it was for sure. But I don't think that's definitely not done any good between Sebastian Ogier and Citroen, but I think the relationship was already getting to the point where it was pretty fractured anyway. You know, Sebastian's not been scared to say what he thinks about the car either. In Germany, he called the car undrivable. So,
Jack,
you know,
just before you go on, how fractured is it? Fractured enough for Toyota to buy out his contract?
Well, I don't think those two things are linked. I think if Toyota want to go for him, then they'll buy out his contract. I don't think it's anything to do with the fractured relationship. I think Toyota have got the funds, and they've obviously got the car that Sebastian would have to make that jump, you know, immediately if the opportunity came up. It's just a case of whether Toyota make that move. And I think, I don't know if you were planning on talking about that a bit later in the podcast, but it's an absolute no-brainer of Toyota. They've got the budget. They've got the best car in the World Rally Championship. They've got to go and get the best driver now because Oit Tanak's moved. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens over the next few months. There's a story that's due to go up Wednesday, which is today, if you're listening to Remove the Smoke and Mirrors, about what Tommy Mäkinen said about the whole situation. So that'll be an interesting read. And obviously David Evans broke the Oit Tanak to Hyundai story, which is also appears in Motorsport News this week as well. So David's got well in the loop of what's going on, and has written a piece about whether we think Ogier will go. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think, yeah, like I said, it's just a no-brainer of Toyota now. They've got to go and do whatever they can to get Sebastian Ogier.
Rai, do you see that happening?
I see them certainly trying, because how strange would that situation be if Toyota have got arguably...
Oh, have we lost Ryan Champion? Jack, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here.
And Trev's still there. Have we lost Ryan?
No, I just carry on what Ryan was saying. I don't think I can do a very good Ryan accent, I'm afraid.
You probably shouldn't do a Ryan interpretation.
What he was about to say was that Toyota, if they're clearly losing Tanak then, they don't have a clear number one. One of the top three guys who have been fighting for the championship for the last two or three years. And that's the challenge. They need somebody like that to go and contend for the championship.
Go on, sorry, Jack.
No, I was just going to say, it looks like, you know, Callie Robinson is going to be in the third works class.
Consistently in the world.
Oh. Brian keeps on...
He's been talking to himself for the last 10 minutes.
He's had a good old chat with himself. So as you finish the point, and as Trev finished the point for him, I think probably what is probably fair to do at this point, we'll go to a little break. We'll press Ryan's reset button and we'll come back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally. Whether it's the pressures of service or an issue out on the stages, it's vital to have the right equipment to hand. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for the world of motorsport and are being used throughout all forms of competition. Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. We've done the old cup and string thing. We've got Ryan Champion back now. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello again.
Yeah, that's what happens when you buy dodgy stuff on the market, as Jack Bengian said. So we finished your points for you. We assumed, rightly or wrongly, you were about to say, having a top-line car, you need a top-line driver, or am I paraphrasing too much there?
No, I mean, that's exactly the case. They have a massive budget. They won the Manufacturers' Championship last year. They've just won the Drivers' Championship this year. Clearly the fastest car, and they need a number one driver. And with the best will in the world, we'd love to see Chris in that position to be winning consistently. We'd love to see Jari Matti back doing that. Robin Perron may be doing that in the future, but none of them realistically can we expect to fight for the championship next year as a number one. And they need an established number one. And I say that, I'd like to see Chris make up there, but he has to do it on a consistent basis. And I think they want a proven winner as a number one. And it'd be great to see Chris along there alongside to prove he can do it. But with that budget, they're going to want a proven regular winner.
How many proven number ones are currently in the WRC?
Well, you can only really say three, can't you?
Agreed.
And okay. Until now, they've been equally distributed. And when was the last time we saw two number one drivers in one team as well? Because it's a significant number of years since that's happened.
And how quickly will number one become number two?
In terms of Hyundai.
Well, if we're going to go with the story, obviously, which is quite strong, but it's still yet to be confirmed. So we're going to go with the fact that it is happening. To manage that driver lineup. And now the other thing which we haven't even talked about yet is the knock on effect for some of the satellite drivers that are orbiting around, still trying to find drives. And, Andreas now probably falling into that category as well. How is that even going to work? How could we see a situation where maybe Thierry could possibly jump ship and go to Toyota, as an example?
I think Jack is still under contract, isn't he, firstly?
Isn't Seb, though? We've just been talking about that.
He is, but I think the situation is slightly different now because I think he'd probably buy himself out of his contract if he was willing to. I mean, Thierry's already said that he's happy if Hoyt joins the team because it'll help develop the car quicker and he'd rather have Hoyt with him than against him. So far, Thierry's, saying with open arms, he'd love to see Hoyt Tanak at Hyundai to help the team move forward. And to go back to your original point, how quick would a number one become a number two? I mean, let's see, because Thierry Neuville is incredibly quick. The issues that they've had there is making the car consistently quick on every rally. So maybe with Oisden there helping develop the car, then they can both be quick on every rally. I think that's a situation we'll just have to see. The car is clearly a little bit difficult. It's a little bit difficult to keep in its window at times. But if they can improve that through some development, then it could be the Hyundai is equally as fast on every rally.
Can I add to that, Tony?
Of course you can. I've just got to come to you.
I think Thierry Neuville believes that he's the best driver in the WRC. I think he genuinely believes that. And I think he's been a World Rally Championship potential winner since 2017, I'd say. I don't know if you boys agree with that, but I think 2017 was the first time I saw that come to fruition. And I think he believes he's good enough and that he's not had the car to do it since then. And obviously he made a few mistakes at the start of that 2017 season that probably didn't help things, but the Fiesta was strong in that first season and reliable as well, and good on pretty much every single type of surface and every single type of rally. So I think if you saw there was a little video clip of Bexy Williams asking Danny Sordo if he was going to help his teammate, obviously referring to Thierry Neuville on Rally Spain, and Thierry answered which teammate, and there was a bit of a laugh about it, obviously referring to Hoyt Tanak, who was sat on the other seat. So
Hoyt looked happy about that.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? He did. No, I think Thierry's very relaxed about the whole situation, and I think any driver who does believe that they're the best driver, if someone else who's coming in who is the world champion is coming into your team, then obviously it's going to be it's always going to be a fractious relationship in some way, shape or form, because theoretically you've got two of the best drivers in the same car going for the same result, so it's always going to be
difficult situation. But I genuinely think Thierry Neuville believes that he is the best driver out there and that this is a good opportunity for him to prove that.
Trev, what's your take on the managing this situation when it is announced?
Let them at it. Definitely Monte Carlo is going to be interesting. Two guys in the same car. I get what Jack's saying. He's 100% right. And if you look at Neuville's performances as well in the constraints of that car, and this is the big thing for me, why would you move from a car that maybe has some reliability issues into one that clearly has got similar reliability issues, but more importantly, the setup is a lot more inconsistent. You take Finland, they can't go to Finland and try and win the rally. They've accepted that unless something dramatically changes there. They always said that the car's too high to win in Finland. And so something fundamental like that, where the setup's going to be a bit more difficult. Neuville knows how to drive that car. He's clearly been using it for the last 3 years, and they've inherently got this issue sometimes where they lose the balance and the back of the car steps out too much. We've heard it again, I'm sure, over the weekend. I'm sure you mentioned that. And so Tanak has all that to learn, and by all accounts, when drivers get into the Yaris, they seem to love the level of consistency and how effectively easy it is to drive within reason what a 2017 car or spec car seems like. But it's going to be fascinating to watch, and Tanak will give no quarter with it. Neuville clearly he thinks that I'm quite happy, as Jack said, I'm the fastest in the world. The way that this guy gets in this car, you understand how good he had it. I think that's probably the mentality with Neuville.
Do you see Ogier to Toyota?
If Ogier is serious about winning another title, I don't think he can set Citroën, or if he does, he's going to be fighting with them, simply around probably budget. Toyota clearly can test as much as they like in Finland for summertime and for wintertime with Swedish rally. So, yeah, I definitely think of Toyota, like Ryan said, if they want somebody who's going to fight for the title again and help them, the manufacturers, because they're up against it this year, they'll need Ogier or Neuville. Sounds
Jack,
simple.
Jack, we're almost in fantasy land once again, as we always end up in. If that did happen.
I'm permanently in fantasy land.
Well, you know, you're a high roller now, aren't you? You know, let's just before we go any further, where were you last weekend, Jack?
I was at the F1 in Mexico.
Okay. Ryan Champion, where were you?
At Rally Spain.
Okay. And where were you the week before?
Los Angeles.
Okay. Trev, where were you last week?
I was in Westgate in Kent, near Margate.
Yeah, I was in Knowsley, just to give everybody a benchmark of how we operate and how our lives are. Anyway, Jack, where I was going to go with this, in all seriousness now, if, you know, and I've heard this a few times, from not from any kind of proven quarters, but if Ogier walked, that would be Citroën done. At least until the next lot of regulations are approved.
Yeah, obviously it's only speculation at this point, but
it's happened before, hasn't it? This is the thing. You know, we spoke about it a little bit on the pod last week. Manufacturers, you know, departing very quickly. It does happen.
It does, but maybe they feel they've got to a point in their prep for next season where they're committed to it, and Craig Breen's on the market. They're obviously very, Pierre Boudard rated Craig Breen very highly, and obviously they put Mads Osberg in for Australia, so they've got options for that seat if Ogier does leave. And obviously, if Ogier does take one of those Toyota seats, then theoretically Yari Matti or Chris Meek's going to be open, and very much doubt Chris Meek will end up back at Citroën. There might be a seat for Yari Matti.
That was a brave call. That was brave.
Yeah. But what I mean is, one of them is going to be on the market, and if it is Yari Matti, then Citroën might take a gamble on him. You just don't know at this point. And obviously Sebastian Ogier is the key to everything, and once he decides what he's doing, that'll there'll be a chain reaction, and that will decide everything for everybody else. But I think there's I don't think just because Ogier leaves Citroën that instantly means that they leave. I don't think those two things are definite, because, like I said, I think they might have got to a point where they feel like they're committed to next season, and the budget for pulling out would not be particularly the reasons for pulling out might not make sense. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I definitely think they're their place in the championship would be less strong without Sebastian Ogier, but I don't think that necessarily means they pull out.
Can I just add one thing to that, just as a caveat? Remember, Ogier shunned Toyota when he drove the World Rally Car. Clearly, it wasn't right at the time. But in Japanese culture, that's a loss of face, effectively. And whether that is something that the Japanese will remember or not could be something that could be at the back of the mind. And I remember since then, they've always said they didn't want Ogier. Well, certainly Tommy did. Well, whether that's coming from Japan or not, that's one thing. So I think the clear thing really is get Ogier and Hyundai. Have all three of them in Hyundai. So that'd be a proper one-make championship, wouldn't it?
I love it. Actually, you know, that's a very, very good point that you've just made there, Trev. Rai, you were obviously out on Spain. You were out. We've seen the social media of you drinking. Did you see any rallying, by the way?
I saw a lot of rallying.
Did you? That's all right. The big thing that's coming out of Spain at the moment as well, we are going to come back to all the other talking points. Of course, it is the last time, and in its current guise, it's going to be on the calendar. Obviously, it's going to have a break and then supposedly come back in 12 months' time. But are we losing something that's unique? I think we are, and I don't think anybody wants to lose it, really, as it is.
You're absolutely right, and I was thinking about this earlier. You know, there's all this talk of taking rallying to the people and trying to get more people involved, as we saw with Van Dudno and, you know, for Wheels Rally GB. The Rally Catalonia, Rally Spain, whatever you want to call it, already does that. It already is based in a holiday town. It's got good facilities. The service park is walking distance. They have the seafront stage, the ramp, you know, by the beach. And it involves people. And there's thousands and thousands of people in the town. There's people, you know, it's like 10 deep on the stages. There's an incredible crowd, great atmosphere around it. A lot of people travel to it from all over Europe. And to lose that event from the World Championship, even for a year, is a massive, massive loss. And regardless of where we go in the world, you know, I guess the WRC promoter, the FIA, they have to decide what they want. Yes, we want markets where the manufacturers are selling cars. Obviously, they want that. But you want spectators as well. And that rally delivers in spades. So it has to come back for me in the World Rally Championship.
I think for the sake of keeping Danny Boy's Irish pub open as well, that's got to be a big influence on that.
I want to talk about going back to kind of the results and stuff like that. We always take a bit of a battering. Our friend in Australia, I will give him a mention. Apparently, you know, it was going to be interesting to hear how we were going to defend some of the British drivers. Do we defend British drivers, Ryan Champion? We've had a kick in for this before. I'm not sure.
Apparently we do, and unfortunately Chris made crash, but was the only one taking the fight to Hyundai when he did it, and Elvin Evans showed some blistering pace, so that's good enough for me.
That's all right then. There you go. We've dealt with that.
I think that tweet just came out of sadness that Hayden Paddon wasn't there.
Yeah, which is fine. I'm sure Hayden was sad that he wasn't there as well, and Mads was there. What was interesting, of course, is that, you know, Citroën have had a kick in with both their World Rally cars, but for the C3 R5 car, it was probably their best WRC showing. Jack, it's ironic, really. I was looking at the results before. Obviously, one driver, obviously, but Mads Osberg has been in it all year, and he's been quite hard on it at times as well. But Eric Kamerley was in a privately run one as well. But I'm struggling to remember the C3 R5 being anywhere near what they were at the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, looked good on tarmac as well, which obviously Mads has been quite vocal about the car this year, but at the same time, I think the Citroën are benefiting from having live experience of a, you know, current WRC driver. And we've seen, you know, Elvin did a lot of the work with the R5 car, and I think when you get a good driver in who is clearly at a level kind of above that formula, doing a lot of the development work, then you know it's going to pay off. So obviously a lot of what they missed Finland because Osberg said it would be better to work on the car than do that event and work on the gravel pace. And then obviously they did Germany, and there was a lot of problems with the brakes and things like that there. And, you know, we saw him doing the old Volvo trick, didn't we? Changing putting some old tyres on and stuff to try and influence the brake bias and stuff. So really, really interesting season for Osberg, but I think Citroën are paying dividends from having him around.
Trev, you know, I think a lot of people have been quite But I know certain people, certainly in the UK, I can speak about in the UK, have really struggled to get their hands on the C3R5. People have tried to get it, even though it has had its issues. It's been dominant over in the French Rally Championship. I think it's won back-to-back French Championships. And now it seems to be coming on strong, you know, on probably one of the more tougher mixed events. Does that bode well for, you know, we've just been given Citroën a bit of a hard time. Does that bode well for the future? You know, obviously they've got drivers around. They've got Mads, who we've spoke about before. Obviously Eric Camelli's been around as well. You know, it might be a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel.
What would you do if you had the money to go and buy an R5 car?
I knew you were going to do that to me, Trevor. You always do things like that to me. If I was going to go and buy an R5 car,
would Citroën be at the top of your list is the question.
Apart from dealing with the divorce papers first, before I put pen to paper on any kind of type of contract for an R5 car, I don't think it would be.
Right. Okay. That's it. That answers your question, I think, and it would be the same with me and probably Ryan and even Jack if he took a job driving as opposed to co-driving.
I think they can speak for themselves, Trev.
If anybody read the bulletins, looked at the notice board of Rally Spain, there's a couple of infringements in post-rally scrutineering as well, where both those cars, both the winner of Pro and the winner of WRC2, ended up with fines. I think the fines are mostly suspended, just small infringements, and that the papers weren't the same as parts that were on the car, I think.
Yeah.
But there we go.
I was going to talk about bulletins. Just for good order, Jack Bennion, I'm going to ask you, because Trev spoke for you, if you were going to buy an R5 car, what would you buy?
Currently, I'd have to start off a Skoda.
Okay. Brian?
No, Skoda.
You'd have to Skoda. Okay, fine. Just thought I'd ask. Do we think, just talking about the bulletins, I was going to talk about a bit later on, but as Trev's just mentioned, we'll get it out the way. You were at the finish, Ryan Champion. Was it a dangerous donut? There you go. There's nice alliteration for you.
Was it a dangerous donut? There was a lot of people around. It was a confined space, but Thierry Neuville knew exactly what he was doing and how much space he needed. And it annoys me a little bit because the rallying needs to excite the public. We need to put on a show. Just give them space to do it. We all, you know, I saw there was a bit of feedback on social media. People said, well, that's not rallying anyway. It's not, you know, that's what Ken Block does and whatever. But we all loved it when Colin McRae did it in a Subaru. We loved it when Carlos Sainz did it in a Celica. And we love it when Thierry Neuville does it in a Hyundai. In fact, you know, I was watching up at the roundabout on the penultimate stage. And honestly, it was a little bit boring, people going around the roundabout, because they were so neat and tidy. Until Cali Rovanpera came in, sent it fully sideways and did two laps of the roundabout, and the crowd went mental. So we love to see it. Just give them an area to do it. End of.
Okay. Jack, what's your take on donuts? Of course, being a roundy man these days. Kind of.
Well, the only thing I can think of that's quite like this is when the drivers slide the car in service. Because that doesn't get a bit like.
I've been in trouble for that once.
Yeah, people have got in trouble with it, and I'm pretty sure there's a regulation out there somewhere that says you can't do it, but the driver's still, there's still constant videos of people sliding into service. Yeah. That, you know, is that any less safe than what Neuville did? Anyway, I think but the point is, Ryan's right, that, you know, before any stand like that you go over, there should be space to do a donut, because pretty much every driver does it, and they all want to do it before they go over the ramp, pretty much, apart from Wojtek Tanak. So, I'd give them the space to do it. But the other thing was, why did they suspend £5,000 of the penalty?
Yeah.
Or €5,000, sorry. Why not suspend the whole penalty?
They suspended £20,000.
Yeah, sorry. That's the other way around, isn't it? They suspended 20, not the 5. But I just don't understand. If you're going to suspend the penalty, just suspend the penalty. I don't understand why it was why he has to pay £5,000 for it. I was just a bit confused by the whole thing, to be honest.
Trev, donuts or no donuts?
Oh, definitely donuts. The more the better. The safe environment.
I couldn't agree more. Just pick it up on, just very, very quickly. Right, when you've gone into service and it's tight, have you used a handbrake to get the car to turn in to get in between on the easy up? Have you ever done that?
I'm sure I have more than once.
Yeah. Trev, I'm sure.
Ryan, have you, just before that, have you done many donuts, Ray?
Have I done many donuts? I've done a few over the years, yeah.
I remember Kenneth Erickson at the Autosport live show getting into third gear doing donuts in a Subaru Impreza. That's quite impressive, isn't it?
That is pretty impressive. That's the sort of thing you do when it's not.
And
your
he did
car.
It every show. They ended up having to put a rear diff in it at the end of each day, I think. But yeah, it was impressive to watch that.
That's not your car, is it, right? You know what? I could quite literally hear the cogs turning and thinking, did Erickson use my car on demo runs?
I bet Ryan's got into fourth doing donuts.
You reckon Ryan's got into fourth doing donuts?
Yeah.
Only by accident.
Okay. Right, a couple of things. We know we haven't got Jackie Boy Bengian for much longer. Jack, before we let you go, is there anything you want to get off your chest? Have you got any other business, etc., etc.?
I think we've pretty much covered everything from Spain, haven't we? It was a really interesting. I managed to keep a distance so far. Obviously, the time zones were a bit difficult with being in Mexico, but really enjoyed the whole event, really. And I wasn't surprised to see Oitanak seal the deal in Spain. I thought he was going to get it done there. And honestly, I thought he was going to win the event. I was quite surprised that he didn't. But yeah, really good weekend. Really enjoyed it. And yeah, I think we've covered pretty much everything.
Are you ready for this weekend, Jack?
Am I ready for this weekend? Yeah, I probably should say something about that, shouldn't I, really?
Yeah,
I just do it every year, don't I? That's it.
You're the man, though. You're the king of Alton Park, now.
Definitely not the king of Alton Park. Tony Pond will always be the king of Alton Park for me. Anyway, yeah, I'm doing the Neil Howard stages this weekend, which is the opening round of the Motorsport News Circuit Rally Championship. Nice championship, started in 2015 and just giving people some rallying to do in the winter when there's not really much on. And it's also given the circuits a bit of cash when they're obviously quiet with circuit racing. So good opportunity. And Alton Park's probably the one where they vary the stages up the most from the circuits. So there's a water splash, used a lot of the rally school, and you know, it's not quite as Mickey Mouse as some circuit rallies are. So really, really enjoying, looking forward to that opportunity. What are you laughing at?
brutal Bengian. That's what I'm calling you.
I think the championship has never, you know, claimed to be Forest Rally, and it's never, you know, it's never masqueraded as that. You know, some of the rallies that are in the championship are pretty straightforward in terms of driving around the circuit. It's just that you get to go in different directions, and they use a little bit of access road and stuff as well. So, Alton Park's definitely the most interesting one for me anyway. And, yeah, looking forward to that. Thanks to Paul Sheard for the opportunity to co-drive in his Mazda MX-5. And I'm with Paul O'Neill, who is a touring car driver who does a lot of racing, but has decided that this is his favourite event of the year now. So I've managed to convert a roundy into a rallyer.
Good lad. We'll be there. Me and Johnny are coming over to see you, so we'll be there.
Oh, thanks, mate. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, no, we'll be there. So at this point, we know we need to let you go, Jack Bengian. So folks, we're going to let Jackie Boy Bengian go, and we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. We're going to do our any other businesses in a second, but a couple of things. My any other business last week, I talked about Craig Breen. I said it without knowing the full SP with regards to Hyundai's R5 program and what it was going to entail. And Craig was obviously going to be doing some of the testing for that. And, you know, there's no better man, I suppose, because he's drove pretty much every R5 out there. But obviously we've just been playing fantasy land a little bit, and also the reality of what's going to happen with the Hyundai driver lineup. Now, this does leave certain drivers, Craig being one of them, Andreas being one of them, and of course Hayden Padden, I suppose you could also still include in that with regards to his connections with Hyundai, very much now looking at their futures and what's going to happen for 2020 for them. So Ryan, I'll come to you on this. I kind of missed that a little bit last week when I was talking about the Hyundai new R5 that's going to be coming, or certainly a kit to update the car. I didn't realize it was Craig going to be doing the test drive, but I suppose now does that block him from having other opportunities, or, you know, maybe that's not going to be the future for him now? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I guess I guess we have to accept it now that Tanak is going to Hyundai, and it's probably something that's happened over the last few weeks. It's probably not just happened at the weekend, obviously. So I guess you know, Hyundai would be aware of that situation. But it has looked likely that Craig would maybe get something there. And certainly everybody's favourite team boss currently, Andrea Adamo, sees something in Craig, and he's wanted Craig to get on board with this R5 development programme. Adamo's been quite critical of their own R5 car, saying they brought it to market a bit too quickly without enough development. And I think they've got a 20-day test program before 2020 to do an update kit on the current R5 car. So next year's i20 R5 will be significantly better, you would think, than the current specification. But then there's another brand new car for 2021, and I know that Adamo talked about Craig being central to the development of this R5 car, but obviously you would think that Craig was only doing that with a view to doing some events in the WRC car. But with Tanak, Neville, Sordo and Loeb, you would say it's difficult to see that. But then, of course, this year, we saw Craig in Finland, we saw Craig in GB, because neither Sordo or Loeb wanted to do those rallies. So is there still something there for Craig Breen? We're going to have to wait and see. If there is, obviously, it isn't going to be the kind of lengthy programme Craig would want, I guess.
Is this one of those things as well that, in that same story, Trev, I don't know whether you've seen it, but, you know, they've changed, obviously, how WRC2 is going to be seen next year. And, you know, Adamo also was quoted as saying, they could well have what would the equivalent of what Pro has been this year. So Hyundai could actually have their own representation there. Maybe that could be an outlet for Craig to be doing some rallies while he's waiting for a WRC seat. Because you would think, dare I say, are we going to see Loeb much past 2020?
I didn't expect to see him in 2020, so I don't know. It depends, you know, if he's enjoying himself and he's going out doing what he likes and carry on doing it. If it's a limited program, then it gives him flexibility to do other things. So who knows? It's his to call. But he's certainly done enough, I think, over the last couple of years to merit keeping going. Certainly on this rally, if you look at his performance at the end of the first day, it was just the goat was back again, you know, clearly. His performance was so impressive. So, it's just going to be a challenge to fit everybody into the seats now. So, as well as Osberg, Breen, and who's the other one? Hayden Padden. On top of that, now you've probably got Mickelson, because there's no room for him at Hyundai and what we've seen so far on the lineup that's there. Then, has Sunderland done enough at Ford, and has Lappi done enough at Citroën? So, you've got six drivers are effectively vying for, with Toyota, if they go with Rovan Power, you've got Katsuta there. So, the two of them could share a third car if they continue with Latvala and Meek. And that's if they don't go for a driver's capable of winning the championship, which we talked about before. So, there's huge competition to get into a world rally car. And you think of the experience that those guys have. And then, of course, you've got Oliver Solberg at some point in the future. He'll be starting to bang on the doors we talked about last week.
Right. Obviously, your wish of pro kind of going is being granted. I think it's fair to say, looking at how it's going to be, it's going to be slightly different.
Yes and no, because now we've got WRC2 and WRC3. So what happens when the winner of WRC3 beats the winner of WRC2 in the same car? Back to square one again.
Yes and no. Does it help, you know, the drivers in WRC3 that they're not competing against, in inverted commas, the factory teams?
Maybe, but
you know, we're hearing stories though, and you know, I'm not purposely kind of, you know, I'm with you to a point on this. You know, you hear stories, the amount of seat time and testing that Kelly Rovanperä has done in that Skoda. How can, as an example, you know, a privateer even get anywhere near to that and be in the same league, you know, competition-wise and everything else? So surely it's better to almost have a, you know, in inverted commas, a privateer cup as opposed to a factory cup.
Well, then do it the opposite way. You just have a privateer championship.
Isn't that just changing the language, though? Isn't that, you know, effectively that's what's happening, isn't it?
Maybe, but you know, ultimately you don't have we don't have privateers in WRC cars now because nobody can afford to do it, and you know, we don't have people
I guess, privately competing at that level in WRC 2 because the cost is so high, and anybody who can afford a program goes into the pro team or WRC 2 as we'll see next year. So I'm not sure. I'm still not sure I see the room for two different categories within the same class of car. I think it's just still confusing to the outside world.
Let me just put it to you. If you're Kaitan Katanovic, who won the European Championships, European Championship's easy. If he goes into WRC 2 Pro, then he's against the factory teams, and that's not what it's about. So if he's in WRC 2 with his Lotus money, and he becomes WRC 2 champion, he is a world champion, he's from Poland, a lot of interest in rally, he can use that and he could leverage that quite well. Whereas if he's thrown into the category with the Skoda Works teams and the Ford or the M-Sport Works teams, then that'll be more of a challenge for him. So that's where I see that they needed that championship. Someone like him and people like that who are effectively working with importers, etc. They've got their own sponsors, and it just gives them leverage.
That's where I was. The reason why I asked Rai first, because I wanted to get your take on it from a marketing point of view, and obviously getting budget. And that's kind of my mindset as well, as that. It does give that, you know, I'm a world champion and, you know, we're doing this championship, and it does kind of separate out. But anyway, I guess we'll see what happens, and we'll see what the uptake is on it moving forward. Anyway, boys, we're at that point. We've had Jackie Boy Banging do his any other business for this week. We're going to do Ryan Champions first, I think, this week.
Well, the first part of my any other business should be to say hello to the three amigos that I met in Danny Voice the other night, funnily enough, three fans of the show.
Okay.
So I said hello to them, so stopped me and wanted to talk about all things Absolute Rally. So
all the things nice we get wrong.
Amazingly, they were quite complimentary, so they obviously don't listen very often.
Oh, they were very drunk.
Yeah, it could have been that as well. It could have been that. A couple of things I wanted to touch on. Recently we heard about this new classification. We've just touched on it, so I think it's let me make sure I'm right in terms of terminology. Is it Rally 1 is going to be WRC? Is it going to be called Rally 1? Is that right? R1 anyway. Rally 1 like is that. WRC, yeah. I think. And then we've got, and this is where it gets complicated, because Rally 2 is R5, and even though we have WRC 3 next year, that's in R5 cars, which are Rally 2. And then there's a new category for Rally 3. And this new category, again, we don't know much about it yet, but it's a new four-wheel drive category. Now, some people might say, well, is that the old R4 cars? But apparently not. Apparently R4 is going in with Rally 2 under Rally 2 kit, and Rally 3 will be effectively a four-wheel drive R2 car. Everybody with me so far?
Lost you about a minute ago.
I'm struggling, but okay, I'm gonna try. Okay, go on, keep going.
So, and this is, you know, this is complicated. So Rally 3 is going to be yet another cost-effective four-wheel drive category. The FIA see it as a way to access four-wheel drive for drivers new to that category, which was the whole point of R4. Now, we've talked about this before. The R4 cars have ended up near the cost of an R5 car, simply because there's so much work in building a car. The running costs are cheaper, but the build cost isn't significantly lower. Maybe, I mean, we're talking €40,000, which to us is a lot of money. But I was thinking, well, so an R2 four-wheel drive car, how much is that going to cost? Well, how much does an R2 car cost today? Now, Tony, you've got an R2 car. Do you know the cost of a brand new R2 car? From Poland.
Around 70,000, between 70 and 80,000 euro, depending on, I think, what the final
around
spec is.
Yeah. So, had a look at it. It's 65,000 euros plus VAT.
Right.
For a base spec car.
Yeah.
But that comes without a trip, without a footrest for your core driver. That comes without a roof vent. It comes
without... This reminds me of Super 1600, this already. Go on, sorry.
Tarmac suspension or gravel suspension, not both. If you want it on gravel, you then need a gravel sump guard. You'd need mud flaps. You also need things like a jack, somewhere to put your spare wheel. So my point is, if you want an R5 car that you can go and rally, it turns up to be about €85,000 plus VAT.
VAT in Poland is 23%, so it's £105,000.
Yeah.
Now we're going to make a four-wheel drive variant. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
So what we're going to say to develop a four-wheel drive version is going to be 20,000 more, is it? Are we guessing? So suddenly we're going to have potentially 1 litre or that 200 horsepower four-wheel drive car, 120, 130, maybe a bit more. Is that going to be the cost-effective four-wheel drive route that we need to bring more people into four-wheel drive cars? I'm not sure.
What's the objective? Have you seen anywhere? Is it to get more manufacturers involved, or is it just to create a ladder of opportunity, or what is it for?
It was supposedly to get people into four-wheel drive at a cheaper cost, and I did see amateurs mentioned, so that people could compete an amateur level in a four-wheel drive car. But that, I think, was the initial aim of R4, as well as encouraging more manufacturers in.
I think we're still chasing that. Everybody still seems to be chasing that thing, is what Group M four-wheel drive gave us. And, dare I say failing dramatically, although I think it was you that's right that said that, a Pro Drive Group N car or an ADR spec, Evo 9 or whatever it would have been somewhere in the region of north of £110,000-£120,000 at the time?
Yeah, absolutely. Towards the end, they were significantly over that, yeah, £120,000-£125,000.
So, at today's, if we did that into modern money, that would probably work out to be about £145,000.
But I think the thing we have to look at, there's a few R4 cars out there now, and the key thing about the R4 car is the running costs are meant to be significantly lower than R5, but, people are then comparing buying a new one of those to a used R5 car. But, this car isn't going to have cheap running costs, I don't imagine. It's still going to take a bit of upkeep, but the transmission, we'll have to see what that ends up like. So, yeah, I don't know. But anyway, that's Rally 3, so another new four-wheel drive category.
I look forward to your rants in 2020 about it, Ryan Champion, if anybody does do it. So, there you go. Is that all your any other business? Because I'll be honest with you, it's like a podcast within itself. Go on.
Secondly, the JWRC has just been announced for next year, so the calendar has been announced starting in Sweden. So I think it's Sweden, Chile, Italy, Finland, and Germany. So obviously, the JWRC is for the R2 Fiesta that we just talked about. You don't have to buy one to do that. You rent one for the year. I think it's about £160,000 to do JWRC plus your damage, and then you've got your recce costs on top of that as well. So roughly speaking, £200,000 plus your testing, plus any extra rallies you want to do.
Accommodation and a few bits and pieces like that, I thought.
So, again, not cheap, but nonetheless...
Has it ever been cheap, though, Ray?
No, I don't think it has, honestly, and no junior championship at world level. World championship rallies are quite long in terms of not just the event, but the time people have to spend there, scrutineering, recces. It's a week. And, whether it was Super 1600, PWRC, there's never really been a cheap win to WRC, and, that is... The feeder series for WRC. There's also a fantastic prize at the end of it. It has to be said, because you're given an R5 Fiesta, brand new R5 Fiesta. You're given the championship registration for WRC3. You're given some free entries and 200 Pirelli tyres. So for the winner of JWRC, you'd have to say that they've probably had the year paid for.
I've seen something else as well. Is that if they win WRC3, if they go on and do, right, they get two drives in a World Rally car off M Sport the following year.
Absolutely. So I mean, it's an incredible ladder, and there is a ladder of opportunity there. You just you just need a few building blocks to reach that ladder, shall we say.
Go on, Trev. I wanted to ask you a question before you go on to your point. Is that you've been involved in fine budgets for PWRC and Super 1600 and stuff like that way back when. Can you remember roughly what a budget was for a year to do JWRC in a Super 1600 car and PWRC? Just
it's the same. Relatively, it's not that it hasn't changed that much.
But my
point here is, it's all very well, you go out, you win juniors, and Jan Solon's won junior this year. It's not the fact that you win it. Of course, that will help you get budget and help you get people on board to help finance the following year. It's how you win it. The people who've progressed are the ones who dominated the junior categories. Now, absolutely no doubt he put Oliver Solberg in one of the cars in that junior. He dominated. He blitzed everybody. And it's only those people who do that that the manufacturers take notice of. And if they do it well enough, they get into an R5 car and have the budget to do the test and they'll do supplementary rallies, that they'll start blitzing people. And that's the only people who are going to get
through. Can I just ask a question? Why didn't that happen then? Why didn't they put Oliver Solberg in JWRC?
Because they didn't need to. They've got enough budget to bypass it.
Okay.
The only thing he's missing is experience on events, but he's proven that he can go to any event in any country and go and drive really fast. He's got it. His system is absolutely nailed down, and he can do that. And then it's just maturity as to what he does when he goes to the rally. So I wouldn't have wasted my time doing it if I was backing him, considering the amount of experience he has in four-wheel drive already.
Okay.
So the point really being, you know, this ladder of opportunity gets mentioned a lot. So if you go out and you get that prize and you go to an event, you go to WRC2 next year there, and you've got six rallies to impress manufacturers, because that's what you need to do in order to get into a World Rally Car at some point, or get enough budget where you can go for a second year in WRC2 and then really dominate and get up there. But if you look at the drivers who have actually done that, and they're not in a World Rally Car at the minute, and there's plenty of them. So, you know, it goes back to what I was trying to get across last week. You know, if you had the money, would you invest? And what needs to happen for these guys to go through? Because we know the OGs, we know Zalub, and we know even Danny Sordo and what he did in the Junior World Championship or whatever it was called back then. And they absolutely blitz people. And that's how they got noticed. That's how they got the sponsorship and the budget to go on and progress through it. So it's on paper, it sounds like a brilliant prize, and it is a brilliant prize, but it's what else you can do in order to get the seat time to go out and blitz people.
Okay. Was that your any other business as well?
It wasn't, but... Just a quick one. We mentioned, certainly you did, and part of the program wasn't on last week, but Andrew Kahn, I'd just like to go back over and just sort of tip my hat to Andrew Kahn and the special person that he was. I remember first meeting him, it was 1986, I think it was in Australia backpacking, and I ended up in Darwin when he finished the Wind Safari Rally in a Pajero Jeep. It was the very first time I spoke to him, and just really, from then on, any time that I had any questions on events, or, you know, he's just one of those people that was always happy to help you. And if you look at what he achieved over the years, not just as a driver, but putting together rally art in rugby and running that team the way he did, and the success and the whole ethos. I know plenty of people were part of that team, and it was just such a strong bond between them all. So I just really want to tip my hat. I'm sure Ryan's got a couple of words that he'd probably want to say about Andrew Kahn as well, just to say well done throughout everything he's done. And he's been very instrumental and very influential in World Rally, and we just need to tip our hats to that.
Absolutely. Right, I was going to come to you about this, because I watched on the other night, it was a VHS rallies, it's on there, and it's a little bit of a documentary. It's been chopped from something, but it's about 15 minutes, and it's behind the scenes at Rally Art, and it's, you know, George Donaldson's there, and various other people. Derek Dornacy's also there and stuff. Just trying to remember, really, when obviously you've been in Mitsubishi's. I know we joke about obviously the Subaru and stuff like that, but you spend quite a lot of time in Mitsubishi, so you must have came across, and you must have been involved with, or certainly been at rugby and encountered Andrew Cowan on a number of times, really.
Well, I mean, yeah, and of course his involvement with Mitsubishi goes back to the late 70s, and as Trevor just said, I mean, what maybe a lot of people don't realise about Andrew Cowan is the long distance rallies he won. I mean, I don't have them in front of me, but I mean, he did, like, I think it was London to Sydney, and
he won that twice, I think.
Twice, Trevor. Yeah. But there was a lot of other rallies that aren't commonly known to us that he won, long distance rallies. I think he won one of them was something like 30,000 miles that he won. And I forget the name, we'll try and remember that for next week, but it was a rally, it was 30,000 miles, I think, maybe in Africa, South Africa somewhere. But he was incredible at these long distance rallies, and he forged a relationship
with Mitsubishi initially through those long distance rallies. Then, of course, he drove for Mercedes-Benz again on those long rallies, but he kept that relationship with Mitsubishi. He built it into a world rally team, and then it became the domineering world rally team with Tommy Mäkinen on board. And I don't think they ever had the biggest budget, but they made the most of the budget that they had. They created this incredible team, and I'm sure that Tommy Mäkinen's move from driver to team manager was heavily influenced by what he learned from Andrew Cowan. And we see Tommy winning a world championship again this year, as he did last year with the manufacturer's title. We see him taking a driver's title this year, but this time as a team boss. And I'm sure that experience from having Andrew Cowan manage him has held him in good stead from today to today.
Absolutely. Andrew Cowan, obviously, we spoke about a little bit last week. It's great ambassador for Mitsubishi as well. I think, right, you think back, he was Mitsubishi as well.
Absolutely. Certainly, as I said, since the early 80s on, then he developed Mitsubishi from just being a bit part player, really, at world level into this dominant force that took multiple world championships.
Go on, Trev. Sorry, I interrupted then.
Yeah, no, it's just one of those things that a lot of modern drivers don't really think of. Hayden Paddon's done a little bit with Hyundai in New Zealand, and he sort of nailed his flag to the mast there. And Andrew Cowan definitely did that with Mitsubishi. And, they're like a Tanak leaving Toyota now. I doubt he'd be able to go back to Toyota. There's just this relationship that you can build through your motorsport. If you show interest in the brand, you end up becoming an ambassador, something maybe Yari Latvala can do going forward. And it just leaves you. You can give back something at the end of your career in rallying and help out these manufacturers who put so much money into the sport in the first place.
Well said. Just very, very quickly, my any other business for this week. I'm going to put it to you two guys. Right, would you agree that UK rallying is missing an Ancro championship at the moment?
Oh, well, it's honestly difficult to...
And the reason why... Let me put the caveat in. Do you agree that it's missing a mixed surface style championship which doesn't require the level of commitment to perhaps what BRC does?
Maybe mixed surface, yes. But it's, we've sort of seen from the struggles the BRC has that the appetite for longer rallies and what goes with them just doesn't seem to be there at the minute. And it seems that, the 45, 50 mile, certainly one day format is what people go for. Whether there's, scope for doing what was traditionally a much longer one-day event, as Ancro was, then I'm not sure. But we certainly see that the stretch between the BTRDA and the BRC is a huge one now, and we see that people are struggling to make that leap, which is why BRC is struggling, BTRDA is very strong.
Mm. Trev, do you think, my opinion, I've just noticed the Scottish Championship has put two tarmac rounds in for next year. And it's, for me, I think it's quite important now that we're seeing, kind of national championships perhaps having mixed surface in order to help develop at least the early part of the career before they even get to the stage where I suppose they're getting involved in pace notes and stuff like that. I just feel there's a big hole, that when I was thinking back to when I started, Ancro was a great championship compared, when we were comparing costs and budgets to trying to do BRC, Ancro was definitely one which for me was achievable. At that time, BRC wasn't, though ironically I did end up doing BRC a bit further down the line, but I just feel like we're missing something and something needs, we need something else.
Yeah, I'm out of touch, I'm afraid, a little bit around what the demands are. Again, everybody, if you took 10 drivers for any of those championship or those type of rallies, and they've all got different needs, and it depends where you're focused on, and everybody will want to do what they need to do. But I think for a rally where you travel on the Friday, you get scrutineered maybe late Friday night, you do the rally on Saturday, you either leave Saturday night or if you want to stay over and go home on Sunday, something that's more than a 40 mile event. Yeah, I see why there would be a need for that, potentially for those businessmen. But again, if you're talking, it sounds like you're coming at it from a talent point of view, given somebody who has done really well. So let's take it like a George Lepley, who's done really well in BTRTA in a particular class. So what's his options then? Are you saying that there should be a championship where he can go into that sort of one step down from BRC where he can go and he can learn his trade a little bit more? Is that what you're thinking?
I'm kind of thinking that we need a mixed surface championship because, you know, in the UK especially, it's BTRDA or BRC. Now BRC obviously we know is having its struggles and it's struggling because of budget and stuff like that. But it almost, to me, there needs to be an intermediate. There needs to be something where, you know, you're going to do two gravel rallies and then do a tarmac rally, or, you know, there needs to be more of that. And I think a championship like that can serve, you know, I think back to the way Ancro was when I first started 20 odd years ago, and you had people like Marcus Dodd and people like that who were doing it, who could afford to do it in top line cars. But what it also gave is an opportunity for drivers is to perhaps take that next step and, you know, learn tarmac rallying as well as not just gravel rallying. And I just think there's a need for it, and it hasn't yet been exploited, and I hope somebody does.
So what you're talking about really is similar to BRC, because it dramatically changed the format to one-day events, didn't it? So you're looking at a BRC-type championship for half the price?
Yeah, pretty much.
There you go. Yeah. Go get it started.
There you go. Let's get it started. Folks, if you've got anything you want to add to this, by all means, tweet us, @absolute_rallycourse on Twitter, facebook.com/absoluterally, or you can email studio@absoluterally.co.uk. And we'll be back same time, same place, in the podcast hall next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.